Hi, and welcome to Let's Look. My name's Emily Van Meter, and today I'll be interviewing Becky Shimolewski to find out more about her artistic practice. Enjoy!
Just as a precursor, if you could tell me a little bit about yourself and your practice.
Okay, a little bit about myself. Well, I'm originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I did my undergrad in St. Louis at WashU. And then I stayed there a year and worked for AmeriCorps. Then I moved to Chicago. So that was 2005 that I moved here. And I've been here really mostly ever since, with a couple trips to grad school between then and now. So the first one, I did my MA in studio art at Eastern Illinois University. Which is in Charleston, down, it's kind of like mid-state Illinois, in 2009, 2010, and then moved back. And in 2015 to 2018, I went to OU and did my MFA. So all of my degrees are in painting and drawing, which made sense because I was doing a lot of painting and drawing. After I started my work at OU, I kind of moved away from more traditional media. And I'm not exactly sure, like, I can't even pinpoint like a moment where it happened, but it kind of just, in thinking about how I wanted to approach my work and my practice and my research while I was in grad school, I came in thinking I had to like just jump in and do right away, and was really kind of working from an older mindset and really like, this is how I had worked, so keep trying to make work that's sort of like this. But then through some of my conversations with faculty and professors and in the program, I was like, you know what, you have 3 years to do this. You don't have to just like hit the ground right away without really thinking about what you're trying to get to, which had been the case in the previous master's degree program, because it was 1 year. And it was really, when it came down to it, not even like a full year, it was like 8 months. And your show went up in April, and that was it. So you really had to come in and like bang it out. But I was able to kind of take a step back and just do a lot of really like introspection. Why am I in grad school? What am I pursuing? Why, you know, like, why do I want to be here? And what's important to me? And I realized that I had never addressed my own kind of identity in my artwork. Outright, at least. It was probably always in the background and always something that maybe made it more difficult to be, I don't know, as like I worked abstractly a lot and was dealing with, I don't know, I did a lot of, when I was painting, I was doing more representational kind of things, still lives and thinking about pattern and design and then I moved into more like biological, organic kind of study of how things grow and decay and process of life and death and transitions. And like all of that was probably veiled exploration of identity, but it was feeling really important to me to put that part of me out kind of on the page, so to speak. And thinking about when I started in August of 2015, marriage equality, it had just passed that previous summer. So I was like, okay, we got to win. But also there's still so much like so much to still kind of keep fighting for, and a lot of backlash against certain things. And but that kind of celebratory moment, an historic celebratory moment, made me reflect on the history of, like, the whole gay rights, LGBTQ plus struggle that had happened over the last, more overtly over the last, like, I guess 50 years. But thinking about, like, what that history was and who were the people that kind of laid the foundation for this thing to be able to happen. And so that was kind of like a moment of, this is what I want to think about this in my work. And I want to, you know, like, how can this be like the golden nugget? And then, like, if that is, then what's the vehicle for that? And how do I use it? And, like, am I making paintings? It just didn't resonate with me. And especially because the work that I had been doing most recently was not representational. I mean, there were elements of recognizable imagery, but it wasn't like I was doing still lifes or portraiture or landscapes, you know, historical kind of like story scenes or anything like that. And that didn't really like resonate with how I was thinking I wanted to work. So I just started doing more research into the history and thinking, like, this is never anything I learned in school. Like, it was not, now personally, I went to Catholic school from kindergarten all the way to high school. So especially in the 80s to 2000, when I was in the younger part of my life, that was not anything that would have been even mentioned except for the negative of it. So any knowledge I had or any knowledge I was going to have, I was going to have to get myself. So I ended up just, like, even when I was in college, when I was in undergrad, 2000 to 2004, still was like, I mean, I went to a pretty liberal university, and it wasn't, I don't know that we, I think we had like women's studies as a major, but I don't think we had really nothing labeled LGBTQ. So I just started doing a lot of research and reading about history and like things that kept coming up were around, HIV and AIDS, especially in the 80s and 90s, and like how many community members we lost because of that and because of government inaction and lack of sympathy. And like, so it just brought me into this whole area of research around that specifically, and like key players in that work and that history and the activism. And there was so much public art and activism around it that I was really inspired by, but it still wasn't like, oh, but I should make my own version of this kind of thing, but more like brought me into like, how can I describe this connection I feel to this history that I wasn't a part of, but I am a part of, or is a part of me. So I started kind of delving into more, I don't know, I guess I made things that were feeling more like memorial to, or I guess memorial is probably the best word I could use right now for that. And realized that AIDS, HIV and AIDS kind of came to the forefront, or, well, it emerged, I should say, in 1981, which is the same year I was born. So I was like, oh, this is so interesting that this, like, the timeline of this thing, this really, like, huge part of history, really, like, still something that we don't even have a cure for, and it affected and affects so many people throughout the world, that this happened parallel to my life, and I didn't really have any connection to it until this moment of my life. So I started like tracing my own life timeline against the timeline of HIV and AIDS, and I filled up my studio. I had this studio that was way in the back. I call it the back. I don't even know what direction that would be facing, but maybe towards the Kennedy, actually. So it was in this weird corner where you come in and it was kind of like L-shaped. So it was skinny and long. It was a cool, really cool studio. And the walls were super tall. So I had a ton of wall space that was usable. So I just filled the walls with paper and like literally drew a line and started kind of just writing on it, like things from my own life, pictures and like ephemera that I had, or photocopies. And then I would, I did a whole ton of research on like what happened in the timeline of HIV and AIDS, and added that to, and I also digitized it. And I can share that with you too, if you'd like. And so it's interactive. You can kind of like click through it and you can see, and like there's videos, and it's a pretty cool setup. And so, I don't know, I guess I really got into this idea of, it's not something beautiful to look at necessarily. I think it's interesting to look at and interesting to place yourself within. And I would love to do another version of it, like big, like in a gallery or something, where, not that I didn't put care into it, but it felt like the thing on the wall was more the research, and it was like the preparation for something. I don't know what something else. I mean, the digital thing was created, like they were kind of co-created. The digital piece is just easier to display and to share, because literally these are like the giant roll paper, like the 3 feet, 3 feet by however long you want to cut it. So, I mean, I have those pieces in my studio still, but my studio is tiny. I don't have room to show much more than, I have 2 scrolls up maybe, but like thinking about how I could reimagine that and maybe either make it smaller or make it bigger. And then I wanted to bring other people into it. Like my original idea was, you know, like how can you add your story to this? And how can you understand like your place within this history? And it's not, you know, it's these 2 timelines, like me and HIV and AIDS, but it's really the picture of a larger story. Like, and then how does that, how can a thing like this create room for conversation? And really the idea of like connections across humanity. And so I thought about other ways that I could, you know, kind of start conversations and bring visibility around things that didn't necessarily have visibility. Or one of my biggest struggles was, how do I guess, like, with, especially in the years that I was in grad school, 2016, when we had Trump elected, right? Like, and then tumultuous years for sure. And it's not like, I mean, things are better kind of broadly, but there's so many setbacks that are still happening in terms of humanity. But really a lot focused against, you know, like drag queens, even like at Story Hour, and trans folks, and just basic human rights. Anyway, it was I think like Trump was was the impetus for a lot of this stuff. And so feeling like, is there a way to share stories in order to understand each other better and figure out like, what's the disconnect? Like why does anyone feel like there's a reason to make someone else like less or othered or, I don't know, not deserving of basic human rights. So definitely a very lofty goal, but that was one of the things that I was hoping to somehow address, maybe in just small ways by starting to share stories. And I moved into kind of simultaneously while I was doing that, also starting to research the history, the LGBTQ history of Southeastern Ohio. And I think because I started to get into this identity work and then feeling like, where am I? Like, Ohio, not always the best in terms of support. Athens is pretty great, I think. It's better than I would have expected for where it's located in the state. But it, you know, you got that little, the bubble, you know, it's, you have a lot of really, I think, liberal politics around there that is surrounded by some of that more conservative thinking. But generally the nature of having a university will allow for, you know, more independent thinking, research, et cetera. And so I was feeling lonely. Like, do I have a community here? And the idea of community is really central to, I think, how I think and how I work and what I want to do across my life. And then specifically within art. So I was like, who am I doing this for? Because to me, making art in a vacuum doesn't feel right. Especially if you're trying to like create conversations or sharing stories or bringing visibility. It's like, to what and for whom and to what end? So I just started doing more research too. Like, you have some awesome stuff, like awesome resources in Athens. The LGBT center is pretty great. So I connected with the center a lot and with the leadership there, who's different. It's different leadership now, but I started trying to host events for students, grad, undergrad, like film screenings and discussion, especially around some of the older, more historical events. And I don't think they ever got the attendance that I really wanted, but I always had at least like 10 people, which was pretty good. But realized then too that they had this whole archive of stuff that was not organized really, and that was just kind of sitting in file cabinets, and like, no one has access to this. No one knows about it except for maybe a few people here. And a few people here are probably like, oh yeah, there's some stuff in a drawer. And I think there had been a few people over the course of the years, maybe other grad students that wanted to, you know, like use some of that for research or wanted to do something with it and never really got very far. And so I worked with them, and that became a major piece of my thesis there, is kind of going through all this archival material, organizing it, sorting it, and then making it, putting it together in a way that it would be accessible to more people and gifting it to the library there. So that, while that was part of my thesis, which I graduated in 2018, I did not deliver it to the library until last spring, a year ago. Because I graduated, I moved out, like the next day, came here, had a final interview for a job and started that job. Like, it was all like bam, bam, bam. And then COVID, I was like, holy cow. So I finally got it to them. They're getting a process. There was actually another undergrad student who did an internship with the library this fall semester, and did more with some processing of it, and I think they did an exhibit for homecoming, and then through all this conversation, worked with the center again to get all of more of the stuff that they had to get it to the library and get it processed so that people can continue to use that or start to use it for research. So that was really cool. I mean, there's also the Historical Society. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's super cool building, I think. So we did like a history happy hour, and showcased some of this archival material that we were able to get from the center in just like a little kind of bookcase display. But, again, like bring people in that were either students or liked history or just locals, and like to share some of that information. And then, you know, like all that kind of like little bits of other people's stories really kind of facilitate discussion about your own stories, you know, like, oh, I see this thing and it reminds me of XYZ. So those were really kind of cool opportunities. And then another part of my practice was I was doing tailgates for art openings. I don't know if I mentioned any of this before, but those were some of the most fun, I thought. And the reason that came to be is it was on spring break, my second year. And I was back in Chicago and was going to an open studio event at where I had formerly had my studio space. And it was also March Madness. So I love basketball. I love sports. And so thinking about the excitement that is created by having some of these social opportunities, and like, what are people celebrating? In some instances, I think it's just a reason for people to get together and drink, sure, or party, right? But like, what's the idea behind having this tailgate for a sporting event? Like, you are excited because this is your team, and like, maybe somewhere in the back of your head, and this is me projecting because this is totally why I got excited about sports when I was a kid and now still. Like, I could, you know, like, I could be that person. I could be that star. And so you like are celebrating your team because you feel connected to them and it's something you aspire to. And I was like, well, why wouldn't that translate to art? Like, maybe a lot more people take part in a tailgate than really necessarily understand all the ins and outs of the sport. They might still go and they root for their team because it's exciting because other people are doing it. But like, how do we get more people to come and look at art and get excited about it? So I was like, oh, what if we do this like pre-party for the art opening? And like, you know, you're there in community having fun conversations, and then you all go together to look at the art. And like, maybe you don't understand it at all. Maybe you've never gone to an art show. Maybe you're just walking by, like going home from class, and you're like, oh, sure, I'll have a freaking hamburger. And then I'll go and look at that art. Because you feel like a little bit guilted into it. Like you're at the farmer's market and they give you a free taste of something. You're like, now I have to buy something. Even though they don't care if you do. It's more about sharing the joy. But like, I don't know, if you can expose even a few new people to something they've never been to, like, I think there's art to that. And so that was one of my favorite things to do. And so we called it thesis season, of course, you know, like going on the theme. So I made signs and would put out invites, and I bought a grill, and it's still up on the patio for Siegfried. And I came back last spring when I delivered the materials, and I did like a guest tailgate for one of the MFA openings. And I don't know, they were very well attended. And of course, a lot of it is like, you're giving people free food and free drinks. Great. I don't care why you're here, but you're here. And then it had a really nice, it really built this feeling of community and welcoming. And I think, inviting, cause mostly grad students came to it, but then we would get undergrads that we taught in our classes to come, and like, you know, you want a free burger. Like, college kids love free food. You don't have any money. But just go inside and look at the art too. Again, just another example of trying to figure out ways of building and fostering community, wherever I was. So that's kind of got me into this way of thinking and way of working that really doesn't feel like necessarily like making art, but it is. And I think, just even in the conversations I've had since graduating with other people around this who are, whether they're understanding of the art world, art community or not, I think people can relate to that on a certain level, maybe in a different way than you would relate to a piece of art on the wall. Like, I don't know, I feel good about that. So I feel like my work is really research-based. And then I think about it as a social practice, and, you know, like less as traditional media. And I've told people this too, like more like people are the media, and not in a manipulative way, but like, not manipulating people like you manipulate materials, but that they are they're the thing that builds the art. Like, you might have something that's the starting point of conversation or the reason for gathering, but then the people are the thing that make it. So that's why I also think like making art in a vacuum is really difficult, because if the people are the thing that make it, you need them to bring life into it, literally and you know, metaphorically. So, in Chicago here, I'm on the board for Gerber Hart, which is the LGBTQ, library and archives for the Midwest. It's housed in Chicago. And so we have a huge archival collection of materials, and, part of what I'm looking to do, is to use some of this material in order to facilitate more research. And I'd like to do an interactive kind of, I like maps. So I'll say map, but like, cause I did an interactive map kind of tour in Athens that revolved around this history that I kind of, garnered from the research there. So thinking about all the disappearance of like the nightlife, specifically lesbian bars. There aren't very many in the whole country, and there used to be many more in Chicago. And so kind of doing something more around like the history of where these were, why they were where they were, why they existed, and then like building in stories from people who went there. So that's kind of where I am right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That was great. No. It was great. And you answered so many questions that I had all in one take. And so that was great. Yeah. But I have one more question. if you had a piece of advice to give your younger self or just younger women artists in general, what would it be?
Just one?
Yeah. How about your favorite? Your favorite one.
This is going to sound really cliche, I think. But like, don't let anything hold you back. Don't let the thought that maybe you can't do something stop you from trying to do it. I think one of the biggest things that I learned in grad school was people want to help. If you reach out to like this, I really love this artist and their work, but that's unattainable. Like, no, just send them an email. There's usually a way to contact someone. I can't tell you how many people I reached out to that I was like, I probably won't hear anything back. And I did. Whether it be from them, like the individual, or like a person on their team, like I was able to connect with really amazing people. And I think those networks can take you far. I want to say this and don't want to say this. Like, I don't know if I want this on the record, but
I can always cut it out. I can always cut it out if you change your mind.
Like, what would a man do? Right? Like, this sounds terrible because it's not true of every single man, but like, men, especially white men, are very entitled. And they don't think that there's anything that's going to stop them from doing anything. This is a generalization, of course. But like, if you get in the room, you do the thing that you think you deserve, and do the thing that's the reach. And I don't know, you might get rejected, you might not. But if you don't put yourself out there, then you're never going to know.
Yeah. I think that was a great piece of advice.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on Let's Look.